In a world where fans have grown tired of the same old cookie-cutter Comic-Con formats, only one con defies the odds. Only one Comic-Con stands what fans really want. Only one Comic-Con dares calls itself terrific. That's right, this August 17th through the 19th at the all-new giant-sized Mohegan Sun Expo Center in Uncasville, Connecticut, comes Terrific-Con! Connecticut's Terrific Comic-Con is back with New England's largest gathering of comic book artists and writers. Plus, Terrific-Con delivers actors from your favorite TV shows and movies. And there's an all-new expanded gaming section as we give you tabletop gaming, video games, and so much more. Plus, don't forget, all kids 10 and under get in free at Terrific-Con and can be part of the all-new All Yeah Kids Comic-Con. Join us for 3 full days of Comic-Con action only in Connecticut at Terrific-Con. For more information, go to our website, www.terrificcon.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here. This is the second of 2 episodes that are being released today. If you didn't notice, a great talk about Batman and the Bronze Age and boxing with Michael Cronenberg, who wrote the Batcave Companion for Tomorrows and is also one of the people behind the great digital magazine Ringside Seat, and you know my love of boxing. So Batman and boxing on the other podcast released today on Word Balloon. But you are here for Scotty Young, and good for you, because I miss Scotty, you miss Scotty. He's kicking ass with I Hate Fairyland. He's got a couple other projects coming up for Image, and we get a little preview from him about those. He's been doing hilarious stuff from Marvel. I want to go through the litany of some of his great titles. Rocket Raccoon, what a great run. Seriously, man. I expected so little from a Rocket Raccoon comic book, and it just felt just like in a different way, but like Jason Aaron's Thor, Rocket Raccoon had a very heavy metal feel to it. And it really was just great space adventure with Rocket. And, you know, I love that shit. I mean, I'm a, you know, Fear Agent fan and going back to some of the old stuff. So I really think Scotty nailed it with Rocket Raccoon. There was also Giant Size Little Marvel that came out during AVX. That was hilarious. He also did a great tie-in for Little X-Men, Little Avengers, which was a hilarious trade paperback. The Human Torch. Him and Carl Kiesel working together. So many great things for Marvel over the years. Well, guess what? Now he's doing Deadpool. Very exciting for Scotty and for us. The first issue is out. I didn't realize it while we were having the conversation. I have since read it, and it's great. And, of course, Scotty is a perfect fit for Wade Wilson and his adventures. And I'm in because Scotty's got that great blend of action and humor that is very unique. And I think comes out really well. It's been a pleasure watching Scotty's career from when I first met him back in 2006 to 12 years later, and I'm glad he's still a friend, and I miss him. He used to be in Chicago. He moved downstate and to Central Illinois, right around Illinois State University, kind of in that area, sort of in the Peoria area as well, and now he's in Kansas City, and he talks about that, and welcoming him is Jason Aaron, among other friends down in Kansas City, which is a great story too. So great to catch up with Scotty Young on today's Word Balloon. It's all brought to you by the League of Word Balloon listeners. Thank you, League, for your wonderful support via Patreon, patreon.com/wordballoon. If you want to subscribe to Word Balloon, do you think Word Balloon's worth a dollar a month? Would that be all right? You know, I mean, that's under the price of a graphic novel a year. And I hope that you're enjoying all the great entertainment that I try to give you each week here at wordballoon.com. But thank you very much for your support. We a little bit of a push in June with a bunch of new subscribers. I can't thank you enough, League of Word Balloon listeners. Word Balloon is also brought to you by In Stock Trades at InStockTrades.com. And there's some really cool stuff at In Stock Trades. Let's talk about some of that Scotty Young product that we were just discussing. Things like Color Your Own Marvel by Scotty Young. Lots of fun pages in there. And I'm a huge fan of the coloring book craze. It is a great way to turn your brain off and just really relax. It's a great stress reliever. I can't recommend it enough. And this is 42% off. It's only $5.79. You can also get the Rocket Raccoon collections. First of all, the first trade paperback, A Chasing Tale. That's all Scotty, both writing and art. 42% off. It's $11.59. There is also I Hate Fairyland stuff going on. Like, you can get Volume 2, which is Fluff My Life. It's 42% off, $8.69. There's Volume 3 of Fairyland, Good Girl. That is 42% off, $9.85. There's The Human Torch, him and Carl Kiesel. A great run. And one of Scotty's first works from Marvel. But that's 42% off, just $20.29, because it's a big compilation of stories in that. Young Marvel trade paperback, Little X-Men, Little Avengers, big trade paperback, 42% off, just $14.49. All Scotty Young, all waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. There's a lot more stuff. You'll find great books at great prices. InStockTrades.com. All right, let's pick things up with Scotty Young. It's great to have him back. The last time we talked, as I say in the introduction, was right around the time that Fairyland was just getting underway. And, man, it's just great to catch up with Scotty. So a good conversation with a good friend. Scotty Young on today's Word Balloon. It's been a while, Scotty Young. I'm glad you're back on Word Balloon. Welcome back, dude.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Absolutely. Even when it feels like I haven't been on for a while, it doesn't, because I listen to the show. So it always feels like you're always a part of my week. So,
oh, you're kind. Honestly.
Yeah, you're always a part of my week. So I never feel like it's as big a gap as it is. And then when we finally line some up, I'm like, I look at my Skype. I'm like, oh, my God, it's been like a couple years.
I know. I'm embarrassed because, yeah, I think literally it might have been at the start of Fairyland.
Yeah, it was.
And Volume 3 just came out. Actually, as we're recording, issue 19 just came out. So, things continue to be upsetting in Fairyland, and that's good.
Yeah, you never know where I'm going to take it. I never know where I'm going to take it. That's kind of the fun of this book.
That's excellent, man. And really, it seems like the book's still going great, still going strong, and a good core audience and everything.
Yeah, the sales have maintained a really, really great, really found its stride, and we've been able to maintain that throughout the whole run, and the audience seems to really enjoy it, and I get a lot of cool cosplayers at all the cons I go to.
Well, that's great.
And the audience, like the diversity in the audience, I think is awesome. You know, from ages to gender to everything, it's just awesome. It really is a surprising project as far as all that stuff goes. It's pretty fun.
I was telling you off the air, one of my good friends, a lapsed comic reader, has come back to comics, and he doesn't buy a lot of them, but honestly, yours is the go-to book, and literally he's like, all right, when's the next issue?
You know? Oh, that's great, man. Yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool to hear. I mean, you know, anytime that you're sitting in a room by yourself making stuff up, and then you put it out in the world, it's easy to just think like nobody sees it, you know? So it's always good to hear those stories where somebody's like, yeah, this is my title. Cause we've all got that, right? Like the book that we just hone in on.
Well, and I'm really glad, man, because again, even though I think it is obviously getting better, I know it's not easy with the humor comic. I just had Michael Kupperman on, and you know, mm-hmm. Tales Designed to Thrizzle is one of the funniest books out there, and he's switched gears and he's doing biographical stuff. And you know, I don't know if you know. Do you know who I'm talking about, Michael Kupperman?
No.
He's a great New York cartoonist, and he's kind of like a Tony Millionaire, where he's, you know, done magazine illustration right. in the 90s along with doing his comics and stuff. And right. Yeah, you know, it's just, he's like, yeah, man, I don't know. And I think obviously that end of the business for him is drying up. Have you ever done that? Have you done any magazine illustration beyond, you know, what you do in comics?
No, it's never been, you know, there's a few things that popped up for Mad Magazine, you know, a couple of years ago. The timing didn't work out, and it was a little bit of a bummer for me because, you know, Mad Magazine was what I came up reading. And for some reason, I've never fallen into that world, or, you know, plugged into that world any. The humor comic is definitely an interesting challenge month in and month out, because you know, some days you certainly don't feel funny. Sure. You know, you're not in the mood to be funny, or you're not in the mood to draw funny stuff, and you're like, well, it doesn't matter. Like, get to the yuck, man. it's an interesting challenge, and I think sometimes actually that helps the balance of the book. You know, Gert's a little bit of a dark character anyway, so I think sometimes going in and not feeling particularly funny kind of helps balance this wacky book out every now and then.
I liked when she went to the convention at the beginning of Volume 3. I think it was issue 11, I want to say.
I think that was the first one back after the break there. But yeah, that was that's what I love about this book. It's just kind of doing episodes of, you know, taking stuff from all different kind of areas of life and then finding a way to plug it into this, you know, this weird candy coated world. And I mean, you know, I've spent the better part of 17, 18 years kicking around conventions. So I was like, I've got to take a run. I've got to take a run at that, you know?
Sure. Definitely. No, great stuff, man. And, really, I tell me about your colorist. We never talked about that. And of course, very important in a vibrant book like Fairyland.
Oh yeah. I mean, Jean-Francois is, he and I have been working together for, God, 12 years. Maybe. We first got together on New Warriors.
Okay. Holy cow.
When I started that, and that was like 2006, I think.
Oh my God.
2005 or six. We got together. I was going to color that book on my own. And then just realized, like, oh, man, I hadn't taken on that kind of, you know, I colored my covers and things like that, but I hadn't taken on that level of workload yet. And so I teamed up with Jean back then, and, you know, we would, you know, sometimes I'd get in and adjust some things here or there, but we just kind of came up together, and, you know, that didn't last long because he's way better than I am. And so, you know, I just kind of handed him the keys, and he's pretty much, you know, I think with the exception of a piece here or there, he is pretty much colored every interior page that I've done since then. You know, that he kind of came a package deal with me on any project, you know, even when I, you know, when I first signed my first Marvel exclusive, that was part of the deal, is that, you know, Jean could color me, on anything. He came along with me as long as he wanted to. You know, so he colored me on New X-Men. When we went there, he colored all of Oz. All the Oz books, he colored Rocket Raccoon and Groot. He's colored Fairyland. Now he's coloring the books, the new Image books that I'm working on that I'm just writing with other artists. He's coloring those. So he is literally, you know, feels like my right hand or the right half of my brain. We've worked together so long that, you know, there's almost no note process anymore. We just share a brain.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You rely on his instincts, and he knows what you like. And
100%. Yeah. He knows when I do this mark or leave this blank or do this or leave, you know, static character here or there. He knows exactly what to do. He's, you know, he's done it 400 times, and so he's like, he picks up on that. And then for me, it's funny because one of the projects that I'm working on right now, I'm doing a project with Jorge Corona that we're going to announce soon. But
okay.
Jorge and I got together and we're really you know, like giving him all like okay, here's what we're thinking about this project, and we're thinking this and we're thinking this, and then he, you know, he came back with our having applied all of our notes, and we both were like, no, this isn't working. And then he was like, and then he came back with a recolor, and he's like, well, here's what I was going to do. And then we were like, oh yeah, well, yeah, we should have just stepped out of your way because you're way smarter at this, than we are. We thought we knew what we were talking about, but he just smashed it. And we were like, oh yeah, yeah, no, you've got this. Like, so he's just, his instincts are great. And Fairyland, I think he just brings so much to that book. I truly, truly do not think that it could probably exist without him. You know, like he's the guy who makes it look like a crazy bag of candy, and helps, you know, the weird dichotomy between the super hyper violent stuff and all the candy colors is him. He creates such a fun mood with it that I can't say enough nice things about Jean.
I had no idea it was the same guy all this time, Scotty, because yeah, man, I think of some of your more, you know, some of the pieces you've done in the anthology books and some sensitive pieces you've done, and it's the same guy and everything. So no, that's true, man. He's the right guy for you. And that's really cool to know.
Yeah, if it's not a cover, I mean, he does all the covers for this too. But you know, the Marvel covers I will do on my own most of the time.
Okay,
you know, certain pieces that I just do on my own will be me. But yeah, almost all my actual comic work has been Jean for, yeah, like I said, 12, 13 somewhere around there. Sometimes we can't believe that we've been working together that long. But
how'd you find him?
Josh Middleton connected with him, you know, back in the day. I was friends with Josh Middleton, and,
okay.
and Josh was kind of using, you know, working with him in some way. And I also think he colored something for Nick Bradshaw way back when Nick Bradshaw was in animation and hadn't really broken into comics yet.
Okay.
And that's where, that's what I liked about his stuff, because it was very animated.
Sure. Yes.
You know, and back then I was definitely going for a very animation flavor, but, yeah, it was just one of those things where it's like, hey, oh my gosh, I need somebody quick. Do you know anybody? And, you know, he was available and then he's fast and he doesn't have any ego at all. You know, he's not like, well, this is my palette and this is how it goes. I mean, he's just really like, what do you want to do, buddy? Like, let's get this done and let's make some fun comics. You know, he's a real talent.
That's excellent, right? Man. That's really cool. All right. Now you mentioned you've got an Image series that's coming up that you're not ready to announce, I'm assuming.
The details. I've got two books coming up. One is, like I said, that it's going to, issue 20 is wraps up the next arc of Fairyland. And that's out in July.
Okay.
You might find a little something out after that, but that's with my friend Jorge Corona,
okay,
who just wrapped up number one with a bullet.
Oh, sure.
And I think he's also doing Big Trouble in Little China. Is that Boom?
Yeah, that would be Boom. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He also draws that book, and he's done a handful of other books. He's an insane talent. So more information on that one later, but that one I'm really, really excited about. And before that I have, in September, which is going to be solicited in the next previews, but, the press release went wide on this past week, but it is a book called Bully Wars.
Tell me about Bully Wars. I do remember seeing that, over the headlines. So talk about Bully Wars.
Yeah, that's a book I'm co-creating with, Aaron Conley. For people who, if you don't know Aaron's work, he co-created a book called Sabretooth Swordsman, that came out, through Image. And it was a really funny, amazingly illustrated book. And I think it was a Dark Horse. And then, you know, he started kind of popping up here and there. And I met him early on through actually the 11 o'clock comics guys. They had talked about Sabretooth Swordsman. And that's how I found the book, was they talked about it. And then I went to Heroes Con and introduced myself to him and kind of was like, man, I'd love to work with him at some point. So we started chatting and just kind of kept in touch. And when I was on Rocket and started bringing other artists to come on, I thought this might be a really good opportunity for us to see, you know, if we work well together and if we, you know, if he likes my flavor or whatever.
Sure.
And so we got him on an issue of Rocket Raccoon and Groot, which was like a fantasy football issue, but actually fantasy, right? It was actually like giant robots and wizards and dragons playing like a football across the whole planet. But when I told him, I was like, it's funny, as I said, hey, Aaron, he's like, oh man, I can't wait to do this book. I was like, cool. You're going to do my Friday Night Lights issue. And he's like, what? He's like, I was like, Friday Night Lights, you ever watch that show? And he's like, the high school football show? And I was like, yeah, it's like, that show's amazing, right? Like, love Friday Night Lights. And he was like, he was kind of bummed because he was like, you know, he's like known for drawing like crazy, wacky, like monsters and almost like crazy, like, you know, like Kirby type stuff. And I'm sitting there telling him he's going to be doing my Friday Night Lights, my Coach Taylor Friday Night Lights episode. And I was like, just trust me. And ultimately he had a blast because, you know, the conceit was fantasy football, but then they literally travel to a planet where the entire planet is a football field. And it's genuine. It's basically like it was a giant Jack Kirby-esque football match. And the whole time there is a Coach Taylor, you know, giving, you know, crazy Friday Night Lights level speeches. And so we worked together and on that, and he just smashed it out of the park. And cool. And I fell in love with his work. So after that, he was going, you know, he worked on a few other things. And I was like, okay, as soon as something comes up or something occurs to me that, you know, and Fairyland was starting around the same time. So I got busy with that. And eventually I had Bully Wars was a project that I started about almost 10 years ago.
Okay.
I started kind of developing it. In fact, I wrote kind of almost a graphic novel and did layouts and everything for this graphic novel. And I thought about going that route. And this was probably it was like 2009, okay. 2010, something okay. around there. So Image, the Image where it is now wasn't quite in full swing quite yet.
Sure.
And,
sure.
We were still trying to figure out where everything was with Creator Owned Comics. And the iPad had just come out, and Scholastic had Bone now, and that was just kind of kicking off, and the Scholastic started their graphics line. So it was a really interesting time for me, because I started wondering, like, where am I going to fit in? Like, the Oz, I was still on Oz, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my own projects. And so I developed Bully Wars as kind of like an all-ages, play on the whole bully thing, but, like, and I'll get into the story more, but
no
so
problem.
In a little bit. But so I developed that, and then I ended up shelving it for a little bit because I did feel like, obviously, it's a story focused on bullies, and at the time that I was developing it, I started to feel like it was starting to feel too mean. Like I didn't have it yet. Like
okay,
I had an idea, and it was close. But it wasn't there yet. There wasn't a balance yet. Like, the themes weren't there yet. And it was kind of just coming off and as mean-spirited and not, there'd be funny stuff. But then at the end of the day, you're like, wow, this is just a lot of mean stuff. And so I was like, you know what? I just put it away because I thought eventually this will occur to me, or sometime I'll dive back in and I'll tool this up and I'll fix it. And then it just sat there for a long time. And then, Rocket came along and we did that. And I launched Fairyland and, did all this other stuff. And then when Aaron and I started talking about what we wanted to do, one story that we had going was, I kid you not, was almost, it was played more for comedy, but it was almost Stranger Things exactly. But in a like in a campy Invader Zim Saturday morning cartoon style instead of like Stephen King, right?
I'm with you.
But it was kids on bikes and monsters in the town and the whole thing. And we were like on the phone and we were kind of pumped about it. And then I remember like that weekend, all of a sudden out of nowhere, Stranger Things drops. And we were like, we got to the floor like, well, fuck.
Sure.
And then we just kind of like, all right, we got to put that on hold. Like that's like, we got to like, it just felt weird now. And then I just said, bear with me on this, but I have this old project that I've been sitting on and I can't shake that. I think that you would bring you would bring it to this whole other level. And I pitched it to him and after talking about it a little while, it clicked. And then once he got involved, and at this point, in the 9 or so years or whatever, 8 years at the time, whatever it had been since I first took a pass at it, I had written a lot of comic books between then and now. So all the issues that I felt that were wrong with it back then, I felt that I understood it now. And so I found the balance, and with Aaron's help, we created the balance of characters and brought in. And we discussed and figured out the themes of it. And so it went from just kind of being a wacky view at the, these weird school bullies to being much more about what happens when a bully gets bullied. And then, I started exploring the idea of, if somebody is a bully, like there's so many times in stories, we kind of throw this out there as it's like, this is very much like Diary of a Wimpy Kid and Captain Underpants with like a kid funny version of the Hunger Games. Right.
Okay.
So it's like all these weird concepts mashed up. But what we really wanted what I really always notice when I read some of these books to my son, and you see these stories that focus on, geeks and bullies, it's always the bullies are going to be bullies the rest of their lives, right? That's always kind of the conceit. It's like, well, he's bad, and he's always going to be bad, and he's going to grow up to be Biff, right? It's going to always be
that. Gotcha.
And it's so what we're kind of playing with here is like, does that have to be that way? Like, is there a way, not in like, oh my gosh, we're going to teach you a lesson type thing. There's still going to be a lot of laughs, but we wanted to play with the idea of like, you know, a lot of times people are bullied for certain reasons and or become bullies for certain reasons. And it doesn't mean that their whole life has to be written off now, or, and, you know, they don't have to be, they're not branded, like, you know, they're not that forever, especially when you're a kid. Like, you know, we're supposed to be teaching, right? We're supposed to, like, when we're kids, like, we're supposed to be we're supposed to be seeing flaws and see if we can't point these out and put people on right paths. And so we're playing a little bit with those themes while, you know, running amok with the story. So really what it is it focuses on a character named Rufus Roughhouse, who is he's always been the biggest bully in school since he, you know, started school. And this book starts on the first day of high school, and he's very excited that he's going to be able to be the biggest bully in a bigger school now, and has all these new kids to bully. And meanwhile, we meet, you know, Spencer, Edith, and Ernie, which are, you know, the kids who have been bullied by him since school started all these years. And you see that these two groups' perspective on the first day of school. Three of them are very like, oh, here it goes. Like,
sure,
here we go. Like, it's time to start this up again. And one's like, oh yeah, here we go. Right. And then they all get shocked on the first day when Rufus himself becomes bullied as soon as he gets there. And then it's a matter of like, how are these two sides going to navigate the waters in the school, and make it basically survive the weird hierarchy that is, bullies and bullied. And they find out that there's a competition for the bullies to see who actually gets the right to rule the school. And then just the relationships between the relationships between the bullied and the bullies, is kind of the stuff that we're playing with. And then you wrap all that up in Aaron's amazing, funny, funky artwork. And you're just like, oh man, this is like, I'm in love with it. You know, it's just a blast.
So there's going to be heightened reality, obviously, but this sounds like it's a little more grounded. And it, you know, I wasn't sure if, especially now that you talk about it and what I remember reading in the press release and everything. So is it going to feel like a real high school, but obviously, you know, played for comedic, you know, or is it off the wall and crazy, like a Fairyland sort of thing?
It's definitely, I would say it leans more towards off the wall.
Sure.
And that's the way that when we do start pushing the buttons on the themes, we feel like you'll hear them instead of, you know, we didn't want to play it so too like squeaky clean and wholesome.
Okay.
In a lot of ways, because at some point it just feels like, you know, we're just telling it too straight up. I read like these Captain Underpants books to my sons, and they do all the same stuff. You know, they have lessons in there and they have the themes in there of these different things, but it's all while, you know, doing hilarious, you know,
sure,
potty humor or whatever. When you start to see Aaron's work, you'll know right away, like, you know, he's setting the tone with the visuals. So, you know, and there's things where I'll write that's off the wall, then he comes in and pluses it up, and you're like, man, I didn't think that the sewer pipes that are the pipes through the water pipes through the school would have that in it, but Aaron drew it in there, and that's awesome. I would definitely say it leans more towards, you know, I'm an 80s Saturday morning cartoon guy, right?
And, sure,
and
sure.
You know, and you growing up with Animaniacs and Ren and Stimpy and later Invader Zim and all that kind of, like,
sure,
those things. And so I would say it lands in that camp more so than where Diary of a Wimpy Kid is a little bit more grounded.
I'm with you.
So yeah, it's somewhere in between all that.
Okay. Well, that's cool. And again, I mean, that fits your sensibility as well. And you always pair yourself with artists that convey your level of humor and everything. They're on your wavelength. So, or you find a middle ground with them to make what you usually make. So no, that sounds great. I think obviously Fairyland fans are going to enjoy this as well. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be a way for the parents who let some of their older kids read Fairyland. It'll be some of the ways that some of the parents who like that can now get a book for some of their younger kids. I really was glad that Aaron was open to this too, because I really had a real strong draw to want to try to launch an all ages book at Image. You know, where Fairyland was very much not, even though it kind of looks like it at times.
I hear you.
But Image definitely has some other cool all ages books coming out right now. But I just kind of wanted to add to that landscape and see if we can't help maybe push Image Comics, which is the home of amazing books like Saga and Monstrous and Wicked and Divine and these big kind of sweeping adult sagas, right? I also want to see if we can't start maybe finding our way back into the kids section of the bookstores and popping up in the kids section in the comic book stores. I feel like it's a fun challenge that we wanted to take on and see if we can't kind of get somewhere in that all ages kids space.
Well, and you've got your own built-in focus group at home. How old are the kids now?
Yeah. Baxter is 8 and he'll be 9 in November.
Wow.
And Milo turns 3 in August. So
that's great,
right? Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy, man. That's great. How's Casey doing?
She's doing great, man. She's her photography. She's an artist as well. She's always, you remember she was a singer, songwriter,
fine musician. Absolutely, man.
We always love that. And in fact, now that we moved to Kansas City, she actually popped the guitar out for a friend's birthday party the other night, which is great. But over the last 5 or 6 years, she has become just an absolute outstanding photographer, and does some kind of documentary type shooting where she. They call it a day in the life, where she will go to a family's home like the night before the shoot and stay with them and then wake up before the family does and basically just kind of fly on the wall, shoot their whole day, like normal day. Like, oh, you guys, getting ready for school and get the kids on the bus and then, take these kids to the park and the dad's getting ready for work or making breakfast or whatever. And then, at the end of this day, and then she goes away and edits these photos and everything. And then, a couple months later, you get, thousands of photos of you and your family in the realest of ways. And we've, as a family, we've had it done. And it really is a pretty special thing because you rarely think to snap. We never have anybody with that kind of artistic eye around when the normal stuff is happening.
I hear you.
It's always me and my tilted angle on my iPhone, right? she's been doing that for the last 5 or 6 years and has moved up and started, doing a lot of education stuff with it where she teaches, and puts on workshops or travels and does workshops at photography retreats and things like that. So, yeah, she's doing great, man. It's been really awesome to watch her, find a whole new art and just dive in and chop it up. She's always been so good at, just taking something and mastering it, from scratch. It's pretty great.
That's really cool. No, and I know other people that have had that done and that kind of photography. And you're right. It's like this, boy, especially years from now, the family can look back at that moment and really that's like, a memory, pressed in ember and everything, and it's there forever. No, that's a really great idea and creative way to approach photography and everything. And also, to kind of create keepsakes for families. I think that's really neat. And then, it doesn't surprise me. She's a very creative person. So that's fantastic. I'm glad she's found another platform for her talents. That's wonderful.
Well, cool. Thanks, man.
Absolutely, Matt. So, all right. So you got the two Image projects rolling, Fairyland's rolling, and then you're coming back to Marvel, and very exciting to hear that you're going to be doing Deadpool. And So tell me about that, man. I mean, there's it's been fun over the years, and again, you've had your opportunities. I mean, the Oz book speaks for themselves, but it's always fun to see you play in the Marvel universe, and I really enjoyed during Secret Wars. Your spin on Secret Wars was fantastic. And
a little Marvel stuff.
Yeah, but now this is more, Deadpool is obviously its own kind of craziness, but by the same token, you're in the Marvel universe, the superhero universe proper with a Daredevil or a Deadpool book, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool, I had kind of took a break from, the regular monthly comics at Marvel for a couple of years while I focused on Fairyland, and I kept my toe in the cover world there. And things were going well and I didn't really see myself, coming back I'm done with that. Just being like, I'm pretty happy right now. Sure. Like I'm, writing and drawing a creator owned book you know, running that ship that's a task on its own. You know, it's to keep a monthly book going when you're writing and drawing it. And, you know, finally I did bring a friend on, Kent Wagenshutes, to help me, you know, edit and kind of project manage these books. So,
okay.
Because, you know, that's a whole another job that you don't realize that you're gonna have to do when you're trying to create your own stuff. But, you know, and then one of my oldest buddies in comics, CB, called me and was like, "Hey, think I'm gonna get the editor in chief job," which is like, "Holy, that's crazy!" And when that, you know, that happened, and then, you know, it was part of there was an excitement there to want to maybe come back, and not out of anything other than like, man, it would be fun to go back and make comics with CB again, because CB had left Marvel, the company, but Marvel Publishing, and moved to China.
Right.
About the same time that I, you know, took a step back and took a small break to do Fairyland. So it just kind of felt like all the timing was right when I went to do that. Because, you know, my one of my oldest friends in comics and at the company was taking his next step in his journey. And there was Steve Wacker was a great buddy, and he went out West Coast about the same time.
Right.
There's just a lot of,
yeah.
Right. And Sunna was also, you know, starting to really, really climb up at Marvel at the same time as she was mine. So my close circle on the editorial and the executive side at Marvel, everybody was stepping up to the next steps on their journey, you know, their journey.
Yeah.
And so it kind of just felt like, you know what, God, the timing just seems right to take a little bit of a break. And but then when, you know, CB's moving back and he's going to come, and he started to talk about some of his ideas and, you know, the kind of things that his approach and the kind of relationship he wants to have with talent, and all the talent having, you know, the creators having the relationship with each other. It just seemed like, man, this would be exciting. It sounds like an exciting time. And then they just called me one day and were like, "Hey, what do you think about maybe writing Deadpool?" And I was like, I've been trying to write Deadpool for a lot of years." Because I mean, that was when we first sat down and had the first conversation, I was on the second to last volume of Oz, and we kind of knew, like, I kind of felt like I think I'm ready to move on and do something else, because at that point it'd been almost, you know, 5 years.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I'm ready to try something else. And they were like, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I was like, "Well, I'd love to take, write and draw Deadpool." And, you know, wherever it was at the time, they were like, like, "You probably can't get that." And not because of like, "Oh, you're not big enough" or whatever. It was just, you know, it was in motion. And I think Daniel Wayne, it was still where it was. Like, it wasn't stopping, and there was no reason to change creative teams. And I wasn't attempting to take it away. That's why I was just like, "Where is that book? Is there any, is there a breaking spot for that?"
Sure.
And this was kind of pre, you know, relaunches or reboots or whatever, right? So this is, things kind of were lasting a little longer.
Absolutely. No, Dan had a very long run on Deadpool. Yeah,
right. So he had a big run, and I was like, that's basically was like, "Is Dan going to be done anytime soon?" And the answer was no. So I was like, cool. And then that's when I was like, and they were like, "Hey, like Brian would want to do a like a run on Guardians of the Galaxy, because that book was just launching." And this is like pre-big movie news. This was kind of like, you know, Brian was just launching with Steve. So there really wasn't a lot of movie hype yet. And, you know, we're still going to see what that book was going to be like. And I was like, I don't know that I'm the right guy to follow McNiven. it felt weird for me to it didn't feel like a good fit for me, even though I love Brian, I love Steve, but I was like, God, I just feel like I don't know that people would enjoy me following that, you know. But I was like, what if I just took like Rocket,
sure,
and Groot,
sure,
like did a, you know. And so I pitched that, and they kind of jumped at that pretty quick. So that was what I did when I wanted to do Deadpool. Deadpool wasn't available, so I kind of was like, well, I knew that I couldn't go draw. Like, I'd been drawing Oz for 5 years. I didn't even know if I knew how to draw muscle superhero guys anymore.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It was, it was too long since I had done a straight up superhero comic. You know, before Oz, I did New X-Men, and that was kind of the last time I. So I had spent 5 years away from that style of drawing.
Understood.
And to be honest, like, I just enjoy drawing this more kind of wacky, cartoony, sure, off-brand stuff. And so, you know, if I couldn't do kind of Deadpool, which would allow me a little leeway on that front, I thought Rocket and Groot would be great because it's, you know, an anthropomorphic space book.
Absolutely.
So I don't, you know, everything's made up in that stuff. So, yeah, that's really where that came, where the origin was still, I always had wanted to write Deadpool. So when CB came to me, this time around, and was like, hey, you know, the timing's actually pretty good right now because Jerry's going to be ending his run, mm-hmm, which is also a huge run.
Yeah, as soon as I said that about Dan, I'm like, actually, Jerry's had a really long run on Deadpool as well.
Yeah, Jerry's had written the most issues of Deadpool ever. I think it's 130-something. I can't remember the exact number.
But, yeah, man, absolutely.
Yeah, so no, you know, not intimidating at all to follow that, you know, not at all. But Jerry's a really good buddy. So they were like, you know, when Jerry's run is ending, would you have some interest? And I was like, I'd love to. And then, so he was like, you know, floated around with everybody. Everybody was like, that seems like a no brainer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just because of the kind of, you know, between Rocket and then I Hate Fairyland, it's like, it just seems, the tone seemed to fit anyway.
Agreed.
I come from before being a Deadpool fan, I was, you know, where it really all comes from is, you know, being a Giffen Lobo fan,
sure,
right? Like, I loved all that Giffen Bisley, you know, Lobo stuff back in the day. So yeah, it was, when they came to me and said that, I was like, yeah, let's have some fun. And so it was cool to be able to come back and just decide like, oh, let's go have some fun making comics again, instead of feeling like, okay, what's my next career move or whatever. It was like, no, like, I just want to go have some fun with my buddies and make some comics, you know?
Very cool. So what can you tell us about the first arc or anything you can tell us about the direction you want to take Deadpool in?
Well, the thing that I'm doing there is kind of similar to the way that I seem to enjoy writing comics most is I weave in and out of storylines and do a lot of episodic kind of one-offs.
Great.
A little bit, right? Like, Rocket is the first one. The first arc was I told a longer story, and after I got done with that, I was like, huh. And I just kind of asked them, like, would you guys mind if I, you know, if we shortened these arcs, you know, sometimes do a two-issue or a one issue or whatever.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, that's great. Like, we, you know, not all the books have to have the same format. And I think, I mean, obviously, there's no hard or fast rule, so I'm not saying this as a blanket statement across all humor books. But for me, the way that I feel that I work best in writing books that are supposed to be funny is to have them really like be run and gun books, and then you get the punchline, and then you're out or whatever.
Understood.
Or you get. I think for me, when I try to write a comedy book that is too decompressed. I'm not finding it. Like, I don't find my rhythm. I don't find I'm not sitting in that pocket enough. So for me, it's always fun to be able to sit down and think like, man, tell a beginning, middle, and end in 20 pages in 40 pages of two issues. And it kind of lets me write a lot of different kind of genres.
Understood. Absolutely. Yeah, man. That was reflective in your Rocket, and even in Fairyland. Absolutely. It does, you know,
100%. It gives you the opportunity to weave in and out of, you know, I want to do a noir issue. I want to, you know,
yeah.
I want to do a cosmic issue. I want to do a fantasy football issue. You know, I want to do all these things. But what would happen is like when I'd sit down and think of these things in arcs, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I got this idea. I can't do it for two more years.
Right.
like Rocket Raccoon and Groot. This was a great example. When I was writing Rocket Raccoon and Groot, you know, Pacific Rim had just come out on Blu-ray or something.
Yes.
And I was sitting up there and I was like, God, I don't know what to do for the next issue. And I popped in Pacific Rim and I was like, man, how fun would it be to write a kaiju book?
Yes,
right?
I know, Scotty. You know, I swear to God, I was gonna eventually say, where you're going, that literally is my favorite issue of the run, where I believe you're going.
Gosh.
I swear to you, man, my hand is up now.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That is awesome, dude. That's exactly.
Tell the people if they don't remember the issue as we
Yeah, I will. So, well, that's what it is I sat there and I was like, God, wouldn't it be fun to do a Godzilla, like a kaiju book, right? And because I was writing a book that, like, any idea I had could possibly be a month away instead of, you know, a lot of times when you're writing in 5-issue arcs or 6-issue arcs and then you've got 2 arcs planned, then you're like, okay, well, this year's already spoken for. I might not be able to tell and will I even be in the mood to tell a kaiju story 19 months from now?
Understood. You know? Absolutely. Like,
and so the beautiful thing about this, I'm watching Pacific Rim and I think, God, that'd be fun and blah, blah, blah. So I just started plotting an issue of Rocket where I was like, well, it's no brainer. Groot's a kind of a tree and he could clearly grow. So at some point, maybe it's Grootzilla, right? So you just, and I flash forward to the future and Rocket's like an old grizzled raccoon and he's the only one that can take down, you know, like Groot has become so large and he's become basically a mindless kaiju, and the future Avengers have to come and recruit Rocket, who's now in like a fight club type basement, and you know, and that happens simply because of the nature of this more episodic way of storytelling, which again comes from the way that I grew up reading. Well, I think a lot of comics were like that when
Absolutely, one and done, or like you said, 2-parters. And yeah, man, that right. The story you're describing really is this great, like, epic Marvel Universe story that in
right.
You know, where Rocket and Groot are at the center of it, and yeah, Groot's the big bad, and like you said, all the other Marvel heroes can't handle it, and they got to go to Rocket, and Rocket's got to save the world basically from Groot.
Right. Right. And so you get to have fun with these kind of things. And that, you know, that came from me watching cartoons growing up where, you know,
Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was kind of fun to just say like, oh, it's like the Sim, like everything reboots for the next episode.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's like we're kind of back to square one, or, you know, the arm got mended or whatever, you know, you play around with that. And so Deadpool, Nick and so Nick Klein and Scott Hepburn are the two amazing artists that I'm working with.
Cool.
Have been buddies with a long time as well, so it's super easy to write for them because they're both geniuses and just, I don't know, when you know somebody and you're close with them for a long time, there's just a language you speak already, and you know their sense of humor and you know their sensibilities and that stuff. So yeah, so we're kind of weaving in and out the same way. So the first arc that we did start off the first one with a three-parter. So Nick's first 3 issues all combined together, and that's the first issue had come out a couple weeks ago.
Scotty, I didn't know that the first issue was already out. All right, good.
Oh yeah, it just came out like last week.
Okay.
Not this Wednesday, but the previous Wednesday. So it's still super fresh. And so that first arc, is going to be, you know, there's Deadpool is back to being you know, a mercenary. Like he's back in business for being like, you know what, I've been kind of weaving in and out of Avengers teams and with S.H.I.E.L.D. and like all these years, you know, he's kind of been wrapped up in the Marvel U and kind of, maybe he's a hero sometimes, maybe he's an anti-hero sometimes. And I don't want to spoil the end of Jerry's run for those who haven't read it yet, but you know, we take something that Jerry did and then it benefited us in a really big way, because we can just take him now and he sets up shop and is like, that's it. I am a guy who gets paid to do jobs and that's it. Like that's, but the conceit of this first one is he realizes like, business is not starting off really well, and he realizes he's going to have to find himself some kind of big job to get everybody to kind of notice him again and come and hire him. And one kind of falls in his lap through a very giant new celestial like cosmic being that shows up riding a big Kirby like crazy motorcycle. So again, we're kind of starting off, we started off with your straight kind of Deadpool stuff, right? Some breaking the fourth wall, the comedy, you know, smack talking, some bone break, knee bones popping out of knees. And then I also wanted to be like, well, let's also throw some Kirby cosmic stuff at this thing too, and see what happens with there. You know, what happens when you take the funny yuck yuck guy, and you know, you throw him up against, and all of a sudden he, the only person that's able to solve this big cosmic threat is for some reason Deadpool, which is kind of an embarrassing for the Avengers, since they seem to be able to handle all the Celestials all the time. but you know, we're doing that for the first arc, and then, man, we've got like, then Scott's going to come in, and Scott did the backup story in issue one, where we kind of play around with Deadpool, realizing that he needs to put a new fresh coat of paint on his, the whole initiative's fresh start, right, with Marvel. So Deadpool decides like, well, it's a fresh start. I need a fresh coat of paint on my origin. And so he starts workshopping maybe possible new origins for him. And so we see what it would be like if his origin, you know, where he plays around with gamma radiation with Betty, or, you know, if he was a crazy looking baby sent from another planet, maybe, or, you know, possibly he was a kid who was leaving a theater on the night of his birthday. And so, you know, it goes through an alleyway he shouldn't have went through, or is bitten by a spider. And for some reason, you know, all these origins end up like, the gamma radiation hits him, and for whatever reason, he looks like Deadpool, which doesn't make any sense. Or he gets bitten by a spider and still comes out looking like Deadpool with swords and guns. Like, and the Flash Thompson is kind of like, I don't really understand why the spider made you have swords. so we play with that, but that goes like there's a nice little fun ending on that story. And then when Scott comes in on his issues is when we start getting into episodes. So right out of the gate, we're doing a Weird World issue.
Oh, fun. Excellent.
Where you know, I thought Jason and Mike Del Mundo's run on Weird World, yes, during the Wars was just phenomenal.
Agreed, man. No, it was a blast. Yes.
It just felt like old comics, and just
I was going to say, you know, the same thing, man. No, exactly. I hadn't thought about Weird World literally since the 70s, and it's like, oh, look at this. This is fantastic.
Yeah, so I love that. And so first thing out of the gate, I'm like, all right, let's Deadpool gets a job to kill some dude that basically embezzled a lot of money, and that dude is hiding out in Weird World because he figures like nobody's gonna find him there. There's no extradition there, and so Deadpool has to go in there for a job, and then, you know, wackiness ensues. And it was probably when I got done. Every now and then you write something and you're like, that was pretty good, or like, oh, I don't know about that one. But like when I got done with that one, I was like, I hope that my editors like this because I fucking love it.
That's great, man. Like, that's excellent.
But at the same time, I loved it so much that I also knew like, this is a really, it's a weird structure. It's also one of those things you can play around with in 20 pages versus 60. Like I wouldn't have been able to do this weird storytelling structure had it been a full arc.
Understood. Yeah.
But because I knew I had the brevity of 20 pages, it would be weird enough to hold you for 20, but probably would have wore on you by 60, right? So we've got a Weird World issue, and then this is something else I'm really excited about, is the timing has never worked out for me on any of my Marvel books, or even Fairyland, to do holiday issues.
Okay.
because, you know, like, I've always wanted to do a Halloween comic and a Christmas comic, and I've never landed on the, like, I've never had a book land on those months that fit this, like, either my storyline was already in the middle of something, or, you know, it was already in the works and I couldn't fit it, or I just didn't have a book come out there, so I could never time it right. And so Scott's second issue is going to be a Halloween themed issue, which is freaking exciting. Then when Nick comes back, his first issue back is in December. So I finally get to do a Christmas issue, which I'm currently writing right now, which is bizarre because it's about 105 degrees outside, here in Kansas City. And I'm writing Deadpool walking around the North Pole. So I'm literally listening to Christmas scores today. Like, like Christmas movie scores while I'm while it's 105 degrees out. So those are some of the things, some of the ones we've got coming up, and then I'm just hitting the editors up and Nick and Scott and being like, send me lists of characters that you guys want to play with, like, because that's the other great thing about this, you know, a character like Deadpool and in this nature of more episodic kind of one-off storytelling is we can really hit a lot of cool buttons and play with a lot of cool characters and people are pretty forgiving of sometimes with continuity, you know, when you're with a book like Deadpool.
Sure,
I think, you know, we don't have to be super, I mean, or even, you know, somebody hit me up about a story that they were doing and they wanted to use Deadpool in it. And, you know, they were like, well, he's going to be here in yours, so I can use him here in mine. And oh my, I was like, well, mine comes out at this point. They're like, oh, I won't do it. Then I was like, no, you should do it. Like, you know, like it's comic books. We'll just put a comic book Band-Aid on it and be like, oh, that was on Wednesday.
Right. Exactly. You know? Sure. All right. I got a request then for a character.
Okay. I'm writing it down.
Kilraven.
All right.
Right, and especially after you said Weird World, because, man, some of those War of the Worlds back in the day, man, those were always interesting one-issue things. I don't know if you ever read it. There was one where he finds a weird futuristic amusement park, like a Disneyland, that has all these different automatons, and a lot of them represent Marvel characters. And there's even a combination of, I want to say, Jimmy Carter and Captain America.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I mean, and it's, you know, just crazy weird. You know, for no other reason. And that's the thing. It's like he shows up, he fights a bunch of weird robots, he hears a couple weird speeches, destroys the robots, and he walks out of the amusement park, and that's the end.
John, you might be responsible. I'm looking at this now. I feel like this might be the next issue I write after the Christmas one is done. Like, you may have just won the – I'm going to have to run it by the editors just to make sure. But it's funny because I've been – like, one of my things on the list was time. I was like, okay, there's definitely going to be a time travel story because I'm not really – I haven't, you know, I played around with that a little bit in Fairyland, but I think you know, Deadpool is a cool character to play around with that, and there's ties to time travel because Deadpool 2099
yes
is like Deadpool's daughter, right? Like when she's older, and so like there's a big circle there that I was like, we've been trying to figure out what to play with there, but I think you may have just unlocked it.
Oh, that's John, great, man. Raven, oh, it's my pleasure.
It's on a post-it note on my computer now. So, and it says Kill Raven, Jay Suntress under it.
Oh,
so
that's
so I will definitely, you know, you're no stranger to the pages of Marvel Comics. So we may have to figure out a way to slide you in there, too.
Oh, that would be fantastic, man. I appreciate it. Wow, immortalized by Scotty Young. That's great, man. Second only to my request of a sketch of yours. And I know you wrote the All Ages Armor Wars adaptation, or did you just do the covers for it?
Oh, no, I just did the covers for it, yeah.
Because that and I always point it out, man, you do that great Tony Stark holding the helmet in that Alas Poor Yorick pose.
Oh,
and truly, man, that was always my favorite cover, and I had you do a quick sketch for me of it, and it's hanging on one of my walls, man. So,
thanks, John. That means a lot.
Oh, dude, are you kidding? No, it's truly. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, and I mean, that's a classic pose. It's been done in other comics before and things like that, but it really does fit Tony, and that's the thing.
Oh,
and
it's for sure.
And yeah, and your sensibilities and everything, I think, really came through. But also, you know, really, it's a real Iron Man moment. And that's
right.
I love Iron Man. I've got I have three Iron Men on my walls. I have yours. I have a Dick Ayers, and I had Dick Ayers when he was still alive do that really brief armor where the faceplate ends in a point above the helmet.
Is the 2 points, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, I saw that on a Marvel Superheroes cartoon, and I think it was their adaptation of when the Hulk leaves the Avengers in like issue 3 of the Avengers. And yeah, I was always like, what's with the armor? What the hell is that? And I always just loved it. So, right. When I met Dick Ayers, I'm like, can you do that? He's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And then Sealy.
I love that version of Iron Man. We were at a comic book shop here the other day, and I was telling – I went Jason Aaron to his local comic shop now that I live here. Uh-huh. And they had a big statue of that version.
Oh, that's great.
With the pointed tops. And I love – that's my favorite visual of Iron Man is like where – his metal still kind of looked like spandex a little,
yes.
and it had the big like band cuffs on the forearm,
yes.
And it had like the big band across the shoulders. That will always be my Iron Man. Like that'll always be what Iron Man is in my head.
I hear you, man. Well, and I'm a George Tuska fan, and I like the way he does the faceplate with that almost nose niche that he. That he gave Iron Man. And then the other is a classic, just as you're describing it, with the shoulder bands on the torso and everything. And yeah, mm-hmm. Sealy just drew this. I'm like, I really want a classic, you know, 60s, 70s Iron Man. He's like, no problem. And yeah, man. I've got like my little Iron Man wing of my art. So
that's awesome, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, you know, obviously, no, Tim's one of your guys. Well, I'm really glad that you're down in Kansas City and hanging with Jason and found a nice little community to be a part of and everything. And of course now, you know, you'll be, were you already a fixture at Planet Comic Con? Were you going a lot?
Yeah, that's really where it all started was like, so the story about this town and this group of friends and everything really goes back to literally the it was 2008. It was 2000. No, it was 2009. My son was born in 2009. I was just trying to do the timing of when the con was. So 2009, getting ready to leave for Kansas City on a Thursday. Casey sits me down on Wednesday night and tells me that she is pregnant with our first son. Yeah. And then the next morning I drive 7 hours to a convention. You know, in a light awe shock, you know, like, oh, yeah, no. Kansas City and Planet Comic Con, I got to Kansas City. I had just kind of become friends with Nathan Fox around that time, and he lived there at the time.
Okay.
And so I met up with him the night that I got there, and, you know, I told him the news, and he had a kid at the time. So it was actually a really good weekend because, I was around a parent, and I was clearly going to be a new parent. And I actually met a lot of people who would become, you know, really good friends to me for the next till now. And probably a big reason why I live. But Fraction, Matt, and Kelly Sue
sure.
still
yeah.
live. They were just getting ready to move to Portland, so hadn't done it yet. And I didn't know this at the time, but they also had just found out that they were pregnant again. So we were both meeting each other for the first time and slightly in a dazed state. I met Jesse Hopeless and,
sure.
and Dennis, and you know they're still really close friends of mine.
Perfect.
Jessie is our tattoo artist. She is amazing. And
it's what I keep hearing, man.
Keeps us all on fresh ink. And then the next year they invited me back. I was like, oh, that's fun. So I came and I want to say the next year, is when I met Jason, hung out with him a little bit. And for whatever reason, we were going somewhere and he was driving cause he's local. So he was kind of driving around and we stopped by his house and we're having a beer at his house. I'll always remember he said, hey, you want to go downstairs and look at my comics? Okay. Like people don't know this about Jason. Like, cause you know, you look at Jason, he's got sleeved out tattoos and, you know, the big burly beard and, you know, he writes books like, you know, Scalped and Southern Bastards and Men of Wrath and all these like hardcore books.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, but he is the biggest comic nerd on the planet Earth. Like he reads like every comic and has done so since the dawn of his existence. And so I literally went down to his basement and it looked like a mini comic shop.
That's
like,
fantastic.
It was just long boxes for days. And we became Jason and I became fast friends, then. And so then it was just a point. Then I just made it a point to keep coming back because, you know, my buddy lived here. And then, each time I'd come back and then we do Planet and then I'd do a supplemental trip. because it's only about a 6 or 7 hour drive from Peoria. Yeah. So once we'd had another trip, and then Casey and I'd come, and then we started to meet their friends, and you know, their extended group of friends here, and their kids, and then our kids met each other, and then we started being like, hey, let's all get a lake house between us in St. Louis, and you know, let the kids run around crazy, sure. And we'll sit around playing Cards Against Humanity or whatever. And so yeah, Planet Comic Con really was kind of the origin of all that, and you know, probably responsible for me. You know, me and my family deciding, like, you know what, like we enjoy these people so much, and we get together so much, and why don't we just make the jump and just go, you know, again, kind of what we're talking about. It's a really interesting time for me, because I talked about a couple of years ago where everybody at Marvel kind of went one way and went on the next leg of their adventure, yes. And so did I. And now CB came back, and he's on a new part of his adventure. And now I'm back at Marvel, and you know, a new part of my adventure. And at the same time, we left Illinois, which I've lived almost my whole life, you know, with the exception of, you know, my high school years. You know, so yeah, there's the new adventure is beginning here in Kansas City, and it's pretty great so far.
That's great, man. And honestly, yeah, and I'm sure it helps Baxter as well adjust and have, you know, friends down there immediately to hang with.
Yes.
And yourself and Casey as well. That's terrific, man. And I'm really glad. And also, again, as someone who has also lived in Illinois all their life and spent a good chunk of that time in central Illinois, I'm glad you're out of Peoria.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, it's a real – Peoria has such potential to be a great little small city.
Yes, I know. Go on. Yep.
But, you know, obviously the financial side of Illinois is not great.
No, it isn't.
As far as just, you know, our taxes and,
yes.
I mean, the property tax in Peoria was absolutely ridiculous. And which is thrilling stuff for the comic fans for me to be talking about.
But I get it. Well, you know, yeah, you know.
But the other problem that we have, and we're currently kind of having it, is, you know, Caterpillar's there, but it seems as if Caterpillar is slowly, they took their executives, like about 300-400 executives last year and moved them to Chicago.
There you go.
And then, so the writing's on the wall a little bit, and we were afraid, like, if we stay here much longer, we could potentially never be able to get out of here. We will never be able to sell a house.
I understand.
If Caterpillar ever leaves this town, we're all going to be stuck. So we really kind of were like, okay, it's kind of, we should go now or never. And definitely before our son gets, you know, Baxter's going to start third grade.
Sure.
And if we waited too much longer, he was definitely going to be in that zone where it was going to be hard to ask
absolutely.
Him, to leave his friends.
Yeah.
So, everything just was kind of lined up, and a great house came available, and we kind of jumped on it. Our friends were really awesome in helping us out. And we're having a great time so far, man. I mean, like, we, you know, like, almost every night we've been at somebody's house, or we've had cookouts over here already. Like, we weren't here 3 days, and I think we had a cookout with 25 people here.
Oh, that's
great. I don't think I had 25 people at my Peoria house total. Like, not even in one time. I'm just saying, like, total, if you added up all the times people came over. So, yeah, we're having a blast, man. It's a lot of fun.
That's hilarious. Well, that's great. I to wrap up, what are you watching? I always am interested in what you're watching, and there's a lot of choices, although I know you're very busy and you just finished the move, so you maybe haven't watched a lot recently.
Yeah, well, we are the thing that Casey and I are watching together at the moment is Handmaid's Tale.
Sure.
We're in the second season of that, so we're a couple episodes behind, I think, on that. But we're watching that. But it's a really uplifting show. I always love watching that right before I go to bed. You know, it just really sends me off to sleep with the happy thoughts.
top it off with Westworld as well, and have a pure nihilistic kind of evening of fun.
We haven't jumped into Westworld season 2 yet, and part of me wants to go back and do a quick rewatch of season 1 and roll into season 2, because it's been a little while
sure.
since I watched 1,
sure.
and I kind of want a refresher. Trying to think, we've been doing a lot of we are rewatchers more often than not right now, especially since we're in the movie and we don't have our TV set up where we want it and stuff like that. So right now it's been more catching up on the movies. I just went and saw Solo.
Still haven't seen Solo. Did you enjoy it?
I did. Good. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, I thought it was really in the spirit of the adventure side of Star Wars, which I feel like sometimes we forgot that that's what I thought those movies were. It wasn't always about, like, you know, especially the first Star Wars. You know, the first Star Wars wasn't like, it was mostly an adventure, a fantasy yeah, adventure, yeah. Right? And then and now it's always so big and epic, which I also like that. But it was Solo had the spirit of that fantasy adventure side of the world that that, you know, Rogue One definitely didn't have. You know, it was very heavy and
yes, agreed. And I mean, I still enjoyed it, but yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a different thing, and I think this needed to be a different thing, and I think it did. I think the Han Chewie stuff was great. It also helped that I had zero expectations. I think that. I always think that a movie benefits from the bad buzz. Like, that movie seemed to have such bad buzz for so long leading up to it that it lowered my expectations so far that I'm like, I'm probably going to dig this movie.
You know, and it's that kind of buzz that has made me decide I'm not reading this shit anymore because it's ridiculous. And I mean, no, everyone comes already to hate a movie. And then, you know, and granted, the box office hasn't been great, but all I've heard from people who've actually seen the movie is, oh, I thought it was fun. I don't know what everyone's complaining about. And that's fine. That's good. So,
right.
You know, I haven't seen Deadpool 2 yet either, unfortunately.
I just saw that one. I liked it. I mean, I think I liked the first one. I liked the first one more.
Okay.
I think Tim Miller was great. Like, I think the director on the first one, I think he just got sure. it in a real way. I don't think this was far off from it, but obviously it was bigger. And there were still some great moments. But, yeah, the first one I thought was a real home run. Like,
cool.
I liked it on all that stuff. And then Avengers, I saw Avengers. That was good.
Yeah, I loved it. Loved Infinity War.
Yeah. That was some big superheroing. That was really cool.
Absolutely, man. That was exciting to watch. Absolutely. And then really every moment. And also it was such a payoff from all the other movies. And I know because of the hype behind it, I don't know how many, I mean, you know, again, what circles of friends you're run into. But at the radio station, people who weren't watching the Marvel movies are like, I'm hearing a lot of things about Infinity War. Should I see it? And I'm like, no. Because if you haven't really been watching the movies, I'm like, you'll get it. But you won't enjoy it and appreciate payoffs that, you know, were, you know, started in the first Iron Man movie and were happening, or the first Thor movie. And it's like, you know, that's what makes it such a great movie, is it really is chapter 18 or 19, whichever it is, of this long story. So, yeah, no, I know. And the other funny thing is, and as a writer, I don't know how you feel, but Franco and I were talking and he's like, well, don't you think this might happen? Or don't you think that? And I'm like, I'm not thinking about it. I'm letting them write the story. I'm happy to join them next May. I said, but no, obviously there's just things about the Infinity Gems that you're immediately like, well, here's five different ways they can undo things. But beyond that, I'm like, no, I'm very content to wait and not think about it until next May and see what they do. So
100%.
There you go, man.
Yeah. So yeah, I wish I had more. Oh, Atlanta.
How is Atlanta? I haven't seen it yet.
Oh my gosh, that's an amazing show, dude.
Cool.
It's Donald Glover is...
He's a genius, man. He is... Man, I had no idea about his music career until he just hosted SNL. And...
Oh, he's amazing.
That's the thing. It's like, holy shit, man. This guy's like, you know, and forgive the comparison. I don't mean to sound rude, but like a great Sammy Davis Jr. where it's like, holy shit, man, the guy's funny. He can sing. He can dance. It's like, what the hell can he do? That's amazing.
He's a genius. I think Atlanta is one of the smartest shows I've seen, man. The writing is just amazing. The characters are just the acting, everything. You should definitely dive in. Okay. It's awesome. It's amazing.
Well, I have a
I
have a recommendation for you because, and I mentioned this to Jason.
Well, please.
I'm not a country music fan per se, but I do appreciate the history of country music. And I'm also hearing there's a podcast that's similar to this. But Mike Judge, the Beavis and Butthead guy and King of the Hill, on Cinemax, he has this show called Tales of the Tour Bus, and it's part documentary, but it's animated, and he talks to all of these people that worked with these giant country music stars, especially ones from the 70s and 80s and 60s, and it's all these crazy tales from the road. And you think punk rockers and heavy metal guys are badasses and crazy on the road, the country guys are right there with them, and it's all drunk out of their mind, driving their truck in the middle and destroying a bar, and, you know, fist fights, and just crazy. I mean, Johnny Paycheck's story is insane. Everybody. And it's great because they talk to, like, the guy, you know, Porter Wagoner's costume designer, and, you know, Dolly Parton's hairdresser, and, you know, sidemen that toured with the bands, and road managers and stuff. And it's fantastic. Right. It's really, they're half-hour stories. A couple are two-parters. And George Jones, Tammy Wynette, that's an amazing story. And it's hilarious. And Jason, I know, is such a country music lover. And yeah, at C2E2, I'm like, Jason, you've got to see this show. It's amazing.
Oh yeah, if he hasn't dove in yet, we might have to make that like maybe one of our weekly drink and watch shows or something.
Well,
that sounds great. And I love that reminded me, because I really dig. I'm behind on this last season, but I do like Silicon Valley.
Oh, me too. Me too. It was a great season.
Yeah, I think that I need to finish this season. You know, the move popped up, so I got a little behind. But yeah, I'm definitely a fan of that for sure.
Me too. Yeah, that's great. Well, and again, man, I wasn't watching Teen Titans Go until you told me about it in Cincinnati, and I'm like a couple years ago, and I'm like, okay. Yeah. And once again, of course, you weren't wrong. Are Rick and Morty? Are you a Rick and Morty guy?
You know what? That's another one that I need to. I have watched. I think one day I finally at the studio, I popped in, I watched like three episodes, and I thought, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And then whatever, it just got away from me, and it's one of those things where I'm like, oh shit, I got it. And then I have it. So you just reminded me, like, okay, dive back into Rick and
Absolutely,
Morty, which
man.
I've got to do it, because also, like, I've done a Rick and Morty sketch and put it on Instagram. It's like one of the most liked images I've ever done.
No doubt.
Which I was like, oh, crazy. Yeah, so I was like, oh, I need to get on this for sure.
I just talked to Teeny Howard, and she's written a lot of Rick and Morty comics for Oni, and Kyle Starks too. And I haven't had Kyle on yet, but I know he's a great creator, and he really gets the.
Oh, he's a fun dude. He's a really fun dude too.
And honestly, I it sounds like your schedule is full and stuff, but I'd love to see you write and draw some Rick and Morty. I think you'd have a blast.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah, that'd be really fun.
So yeah, no, great stuff. And I love the show. Slot is the one that recommended. I came late to it, midway through when the third season was just wrapping up. And obviously I've binge watched it since, and I've watched all three seasons. Yeah, it's amazing. So very cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Too
dude.
Funny. All right, dude. Well, this is a good catch up, and I'm psyched for the new stuff that's coming. And I of course am still enjoying Fairyland. And yeah, man, I gotta hit the store this weekend and pick up my first issue of Deadpool. And
oh, thanks, man. Yeah, and then when we get closer to fall. Let's reconvene, and then I'd love to introduce you to Aaron and Jorge and let you pick the brains of some of these young geniuses that are gonna come and devour us all with their immense skills.
Sounds good. No, that'd be great, man. So yeah, let's try something later in the year and reconvene with Scotty Young and get some more tales from him.
Awesome. Thanks, John. I appreciate it, brother.
A great creator that's doing things his way, Scotty Young, on today's Word Balloon. We didn't talk about the business that much. We're going to have to rectify that in our next conversation. And I'm always interested in Scotty's opinions of not only the comic market, but the podcast world as well. He's an avid podcast listener and a good critical ear that a lot of times I will sit down with and go, all right, what do you think about what's going on? So Scotty Young on today's Word Balloon. I hope you enjoyed it. All brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Some of the great books that are available with Scotty Young's name on it at InStock Trades. Let's see here. We've got his great collaboration with Neil Gaiman. Fortunately, The Milk from HarperCollins, man. A very cool story. Something, again, that we talked about off the air, and I've yet to talk to him about it on the air. What a great collaboration. 30% off, $10.49. You can get a lot of his great Oz work. The Oz Omnibus hardcover. Eric Shanover doing the writing, Scotty Young doing the art. It's a gigantic but beautiful rendition of the Oz Tales. And man, I'm telling you, this thing is so worth it. So many great stories, not just the classic story in the omnibus. Well worth it, and a real nice thing to sit down with a kid with and explore the world of L. Frank Baum's Wizard of Oz. 42% off, $72.50. Now, if you do want to get the trades, they're also available as well. You can get Emerald City of Oz for $11.59. There's the Wonderful Wizard of Oz new packaging, the original classic story, 42% off, $14.49. Just a couple of the Oz books. There's also things like Giant Size Little Marvel, AVX hardcover. That's 42% off, $14.49. There's the Rocket Raccoon and Groot trade paperback, Tricks of the Trade. That is with Felipe Andrade helping Scotty with the art, but it still kept that consistent, beautiful look. Scotty doing the writing. 42% off, $10.43. All available for you at InStockTrades.com. Don't forget, if your orders are $50 or more, you'll receive free shipping. Great books, great prices, InStockTrades.com. Thanks again for listening to today's Word Balloon. Don't forget Mike Cronenberg talking about Batman and the Bronze Age and my favorite sport, the sweet science, boxing. Boxing is on an uptick. And you know my love of boxing. I used to cover the sport for 16 years, 1989 till 2006. I guess technically 17 years when you think about it. But I wrote articles for Ring Magazine and Boxing Illustrated. I should say for Ring, it was really more fight results. And I did it very briefly, but I spent a good 7 years with Boxing Illustrated, stretching back from 1989 all the way up to 1996. Is that the right math? I was promised there'd be no math today. But those were the years. And then I continued to cover boxing and radio on The Score starting in 19, starting at The Loop and then The Score back in 1990. And then all the way until 2006 was the last time I covered boxing for any broadcast outlet. But I'm still a fan, and here we are 12 years later, so it's great to talk about boxing because it's on the uprise. There's been some really great fights in the last 12 months. And I can honestly, hell, even more than that, 15 months, I guess. And truly, classic fights. And there's some really great fighters out there. So it's a pleasure to talk to Mike Cronenberg about that subject. Also, later on in a few days, you'll be hearing from Doug Fisher, who will also talk comics and boxing with me on another episode of Word Balloon. That's coming up before the 4th of July, along with some other great conversations I've had. Want to tease? Jerry Ordway coming up on Word Balloon. Don McGregor, one of Black Panther's important creative fathers, on an episode of Word Balloon. Really great stuff. A couple other people that are coming up that are promised around the holiday season. So I'm not sure if they'll make it before the 4th. But certainly June into July, the hits just keep on coming. Great conversations here on Word Balloon. Jason Inman is going to come back. Jupiter Jet, the fine new young adult comic that he and Ashley Robinson created. We're going to talk about the new collection, their first trade paperback coming out this summer. So lots to talk about on Word Balloon in the days and weeks ahead. I hope you'll join me. Thanks for listening today. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2018.